2005, Easter Seminar, Lecture 9. Non-judgmentally, I live in the now. Non-judgmentally, living in the now. I select out of the allness each step of my path. I am incomparable, without equal, unrivaled, unparalleled, unsurpassed, unmatched, unique. Resurrection, non-judgmentally living in the now. Our Easter seminar has been based upon the theme, the resurrection. And we are, in our resurrection, waking up to who we are. We're waking up to our reality. We're waking up to the direction that we want to go in life, to what our values are, and to what we want to accomplish. And unfortunately, we are not as far along the path as we would like to believe. There are several things that we do which inhibit us from being far along the path. One of the major things we do is we compare ourselves to others. We judge others. We look at what others do and we say, oh, if I could only do that, or if I could only be like that, or I'm better than they are, or why don't I have the opportunity to do what they're doing? I could do it just as well as they do it. You know, judgments like that. And those sort of judgments place us right where we belong, nowhere. They place us right where we belong. We have come to planet Earth, to this dimension and this time and this space, to play the game of remembering who we are. We're here to be ourselves and have fun, but to remember who we are. And who are we? Do we judge ourselves by anyone else to say who we are? No. Who are we? Are we divine? Well, that would be a wonderful thing. Are we our original purity and integrity? Well, what does that mean, you know? Who are we? Are we beautiful beings? Or are we beings that want what other people have? Do we go to war with other people and take from them what we want? Do we look at the world and wish other people unhappiness, like disease and experiences that are limiting to them? And you say, well, who would ever do a thing like that purposely? And the people who would do that are the same people of the story I'm going to tell you right now. I told the story before, and I'll tell it often again, I'm sure. There was a time on planet Earth where the consciousness of people had risen to such a high level that they could speak their word, think their thought, and whatever they thought about was demonstrated for them. They lived in paradise. They lived in absolute paradise. They did not want anything anybody else had because all they had to do was think it and they had it themselves. You understand? They had no judgment. They had no possession of another person. There was no feeling that they wanted to have what another person had or that another person was better than they are. If another person excelled in the skill of writing, they said, I am a great writer. And they sat down and wrote. And they wrote beautifully in their own beautiful feeling, technique, genre, whatever was natural to them, they wrote in that. Okay. So, these people were quite spectacular. They were called the Atlanteans. They lived many, many thousands of years ago, perhaps even millions, but many thousands of years ago. And they were quite a remarkable people. And they populated several continents. The continent of Mu and the continent of Atlantis. And They had social intercourse with each other, and they had no need for anything from the other. Everything was just great. And there are many other stories that go along with this, but at the moment we'll take this one. And as the people of Atlantis were living quite comfortably and peacefully, with no excitement to speak of except just the joy of being, which was quite nice, some of their fellows came along. They were called scientists, and they said to the people as they gathered them in mass in their minds and spoke to them, and said, "You know, you guys are working too hard." Well, no one had ever told them something like that. They had never felt that they were working too hard. They never felt that they were exercising too much of their gray matter, that it was something that they should even consider not doing it so much. But the people listened. And the people said to these scientists, "Well, what is it that you're suggesting?" And the scientists said, "Well, you let us do the thinking for you, and we'll take that burden away from you so you don't have to worry about that. And whatever you want, you just ask us and we'll give it to you." Of course, at the moment, they were whatever they wanted. They just thought it and they had it. They didn't have to ask anybody. But they thought, "Hey, that's such a charming concept. That's called marriage, you know. If you want something, you ask your wife if you can do it, or you ask your husband if you can do it. You can't just go and do it because you want to do it by yourself." And so, interesting, isn't it? So they decided, "Well, hey, let's try that." And so they tried that, and the scientists took over. Well, the scientists had ulterior motives. The scientists wanted to be in charge of everybody's mind on the face of the earth. They wanted to be in charge of everything. And so they built this great cadre of awareness in themselves and excluded the individual private thinking of anybody else. Nobody else was allowed to do any thinking. Now you say, "Well, how can that happen?" When you are working with mind and all these people's minds are instantly one mind as your mind, and they have given you permission to be their thinker, you know, that's done. We cannot conceive that because we are working as a bunch of individuals right now. We think. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, so these people who were scientists and took over the control of the other people's minds, they began wanting to manipulate. And the first thing they wanted to manipulate was other planets. They wanted to control people not only on this planet Earth, but on other planets. And so they built gigantic pyramids that had light beacons on the top. And these light beacons sent out rays to other planets, allowing them to control the people who were on other planets too. I mean, their plan was very vast. Well, they built many of these pyramids around the Earth, and some stand yet today. And they had these great lights on the top, these great beacons, and these beacons transcended all time and space and moved to planets throughout the galaxy, and they were in charge of people on other planets they never even seen and never even knew about, but they were in charge. And so as they continued to do this, the people became more lackadaisical, like the Romans, with the Greeks being their slaves, taking over their activities. But they became more lackadaisical until the day came when the people just didn't really care about anything. They just sort of were doing nothing. They were a retired group of people, you know. And so then these scientists, with their great wisdom, their great genius, made a mistake. And as they were shining their beacons up in the sky, manipulating other planets and other places, their beams crossed. And at the moment of their crossing, the power came down into the pyramid itself, returning, you know, in multiple force, until it caused the planets to, not the planets, but it caused the continents to disintegrate and sink into the sea. And both Mu and Atlantis were like that. Well, now, there were other continents too. And these Atlanteans had traveled to the other continents, but they had not allowed these people on the other continents to enjoy their great genius. But they appeared on the other continents like a Jesus or like a Quetzalcoatl or some other great savior, showing the people how to utilize their land in a more beneficial way. And also they disappeared in the same way. Well, Atlantis and Mu are no longer, and they're thought to be fairy tales, and perhaps they are, but they're thought to be fairy tales. But this is how we are. We were born with the ability to think our thought and instantly have anything that we thought our thought about, because our thought was the power of all that exists. And we could think our thought, and we could manifest whatever our thought was and bring that forth in our world. And we did that. But then we were taught we shouldn't think those thoughts. We should let mommy and daddy think the thoughts for you. And then mommy and daddy said, well, we should let the school think the thoughts for them and the children both. And then we should let the government think the thoughts for mommy and daddy. And we should let the president think the thoughts for mommy and daddy and the government and schools and everything else. And as this continued from a very simple level of the family and so forth on out, it became so horrendous, so overwhelming, that today we don't believe that we can speak our own word and have results. There are some teachers who go around teaching that we can speak our word and we can get great results. And as we listen to these teachers, we call them Pollyanna teachers, we call them strange teachers, because they are teaching only those willing to listen. Now, everyone has the same capacity to enjoy the ability to use their mind, to use their thinking, to accomplish any goal that they may have in their heart, their mind, and soul. Anything. It doesn't matter what it may be, how silly, how grand, how insignificant. It doesn't make any difference, but they have that ability. And for a while, there is an upsurgence of interest in this. Like in the 30s here in America, there was a great interest in this. Napoleon Hill and people like that. Back in the 17th century, there was a resurgence of interest in the mind. And then back in the time of Galileo, he stood up to the Pope and said, hey, the earth is not the center of the universe. The earth revolves around the sun. And the sun is not the center of the universe, but the sun revolves around other whatever. And the Pope said, you're a naughty boy. You stay in the house and don't go out. And he was under house arrest until he died, because he had this opinion, and it was contrary to the Pope's. Now, the Pope was not wrong in doing what he did. The Pope merely stood up for what he believed. Unfortunately, someone didn't get to the Pope and teach him these beautiful concepts of the mind, as Galileo had come to understand and realize from his intellectual circle of geniuses. But there are intellectual circles of geniuses throughout all of time. And very few people are privy to be in that intellectual circle of geniuses, because they are going to have to do some work. They're going to have to do work with their gray matter, not with their physical body. What do we think of when we think of an athlete? We think of an uneducated boar, right? An athlete is generally why? And the reason is very important. Why is an athlete an uneducated person? Because generally speaking, an athlete puts 100% of his time on his athletics, on his training skill, preparing his body to be an exquisite artist at whatever he's doing. And there's nothing wrong with that. You understand?
Yeah.
Now, are you a mental person? Are you a mental, spiritual person? Are you interested in putting 100% of your time on developing, so to speak, opening up your gray matter to getting into who you really are? Do you really want to do that? Are you really interested in doing this? Are you willing to give everything that it takes to do this? And the answer is no. Because you want your own group of thoughts and you do not want them to be molested. Your thoughts are, you feel sorry for yourself sometimes, and you don't want that to be molested. You want to have that whenever you want to have it. And you have thoughts that say you don't feel good at times, and you want that. You don't want someone to take that thought away from you. You have thoughts that say at times that you're poor, and you don't want that thought taken away from you, because that's your right to have it. Now, were we to teach little children that they have the right and responsibility to think the thought that they are independently wealthy, that they're healthy, absolutely healthy. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Words they don't understand, we don't understand, it doesn't matter. What the words mean is the ultimate in a perfect body, a perfect mind, perfect spirit, which is not bad, right? Okay, now, when are we going to take the same genius that the athletes take in developing their skill as an athlete and apply it to our skill of being a divine being, of being who we really are? Now, what if you were to take an athlete, this is a dedicated person, okay?
Yeah.
And you had him shift his dedication from athletics to intellectual ability, into spiritual awareness. Do you think that he could have the same enthusiasm for doing that as the other? Yes, if he has the right teacher. And the right teacher motivates him, inspires him, trains him. Now, stop and think once. Here you have an athlete, and his instructor is standing there saying, 90 more push-ups, this is here, do those things here, do this exercise here. Now, let's run the track. But I am in soccer. I don't have to run. But running and soccer are hand in hand. Okay. You see, his instructor is motivated, and his instructor knows how to motivate. Because you see, in truth, soccer and running are not the same thing. Soccer is the most intricate activity you could ever want, because you're this way, you're this way, you're this way, you're this way, your body is here, your head is there, your ball is here. You are a magical being as a soccer player. You know that. A soccer player is a magical being. He is not a runner. A runner is a bloop, 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 plodding along, running, and of course that's an art too. We would handle that differently. But a soccer player needs to learn that he is good. What do soccer players usually do? They bounce the ball off their toe, they bounce it off their knee, they bounce it off their head. They keep that ball in motion with their own physical body, and they play around, and they don't kick it as far as they can. They are the master of it. They have it go as high as they want. They have it move like they are, in other words, an accomplished clown. You see, a clown can fall making it look like he's hurting himself terribly and that he's so stupid to fall that way. But he's trained himself to do that so he does not hurt himself, so he can fall in a way that it looks like he'd break his neck, and yet he doesn't hurt himself in the slightest because he is skillful at it. Now you see, these skillful things we can learn. These skillful things we have learned. These skillful things we can put into practice. These skillful things they can be our reality from the physical, from the mental, from the spiritual. Why do you think that people went to monasteries and prayed and meditated and did their thing? Do you think that every single monk in a monastery who was told, now, this is time for meditation, go and meditate. Do you think every single monk went to meditate? Obviously not. They played with themselves. They played with their bodies, and that's all they had to play with, you know. And so they would sort of maybe roll a ball back and forth on the floor, or they would do all sorts of things to while away the time until it was time to go and eat, or time to go and work in the vineyards, or time to go do something else. But to meditate, who taught them how to meditate? Did they sit in a group where the abbot would sit down with them and say, okay, now, here is how you meditate. You tell me one abbot who knows how to meditate and who teaches that meditation to the group. New people come in, they have to be self-directed. They have to be self-taught on meditation, on introspection, on spiritual illumination, on awareness. They had to do it. And some were blessed with that ability and that interest in being that way, and then they followed it. But most of them, they were there just for the joke. They didn't have to go to work. They didn't have to do anything. They could wear these dresses and these robes, and they could stay warm and cozy, and they didn't have to change them very often, and they didn't have to do anything. All they did was eat and drink and sleep and work in the vineyard and then sleep some more while they're supposed to be meditating. You know, one of the fastest ways to get through an hour of meditation is sleep. You know that? Yeah? I know that. And I've seen that, and I know that, and I know who's doing it, and it doesn't matter. Because if you have not the interest to apply yourself to the rules of the game, then I have no interest in being concerned about you. No. When you go to a school, and in the school, you are given so many hours of homework every day, mostly. And in a school, that is a school that really wants you to get someplace. And in a school, they keep you so busy from one subject to the next, you don't have time to think. Oh, there's a moment of recess because they have to have recess. And there's a moment for going to the toilet and a moment for other lunch and other necessary things. But zoop, the day is over. You get there at 8 in the morning, and at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, school's over. And then you go away. Now, after school is over, that's the time that you should be playing. After school is over, that's the time you should be doing other things, but that's not the way they're planned. So, the teacher is underpaid. Hey, why is the teacher underpaid? Because the teacher doesn't believe she's worth any more, or he's worth more. The teacher doesn't believe that they're underpaid, or else they wouldn't work there. If a teacher loves to teach, pay is the last thing that's important. However, if a teacher loves to teach, they apply the principle of abundance as well to themselves as to their students. You understand? They teach their students how to learn and how to practice it, and they teach themselves how to learn and practice it. And when the kids say to the teacher, do you earn enough money teaching? I hear that teachers aren't paid very well. And this teacher says, oh, what do you mean, earn enough money? I'm independently wealthy. I have all the money that I could ever need and want and use, and whenever I have a need for anything that's off the beaten path, it's there. I am independently wealthy. I say that I am independently wealthy, and I am, and I enjoy independent wealth. And teaching, the money I earn from teaching, is not the money that I get. It's you kids, how well you take what I'm sharing with you and act upon it. How well you listen to my story. But teacher, you're so interesting. You are the nicest teacher of all the teachers we have because your class is so fascinating. Fascinating, don't use those words, but your class is so good that it goes by so quickly that, so quick, they don't say quickly, it goes by so quick that we don't even realize that it's over and the bell rings and we have to leave. Oh, but we just got started because it's exciting. And then they go into another class and it's Boresville, you know. And the teacher is not interested in teaching. The teacher just wants her wage or his wage, and the teacher doesn't care. Now, you see, we live in this most interesting world. And this world has so many ramifications to it. It has the ramifications of the Atlanteans. It has the ramifications of the scientists. It has the ramifications of Galileo and the Pope. It has the ramifications of the monks and the abbot. It has the ramifications of the teachers and the schools. It has the ramifications of the parents and the children and the parents. And all of these things boil down to one thing. What is your motivation, if you will, or what is your drive to learn? Is your drive to learn to be yourself and have fun? Or is your drive to learn to show off to other people and to show off to your parents that you have learned well? Do you learn grammar in school? No. You learn grammar in your association. Do you learn mathematics in school? No. You learn it in your association. Do you learn civics? Do you learn social sciences? Do you learn geography in school? No. You learn it in your desire to know it. The teacher can stand up there and prattle away on their subject from now until the end of the season, and you don't hear a word. But somewhere inside you, and the teacher is teaching geography, but somewhere inside you is an interest in people. And so you go to the boy next door, and you say, Grigorovich, where are you from?
I'm from the Ukraine.
Well, where is the Ukraine?
Well, Ukraine is by Russia, and today it's different. It's a nation of itself, and it's a good nation.
Oh, tell me about the Ukraine. And so he learns all about the Ukraine, but he's got to learn about Russia, and he's got to learn about how the country at one time had held the Ukraine as part of its possession, and how the other countries around it are doing these things, and how they had wars, and the wars ended, and that these people did this here. And before he knows it, he's got the whole European theater and the Asian theater under control. And then on the other side lives a little Japanese boy. And he says, well, Hishu, where are you from?
I'm from Japan.
Well, what is Japan like?
Oh, Japan is so wonderful. Japan is just a little tiny island, but it's got the most wonderful people in the world. We are thinkers. We are not limited by patents or rules or anything. He says, whatever we see, we take and we use and we benefit from and we reproduce it in our own way. Ooh, how do you do that? You know, that's not necessarily learning a proper attitude, but that's learning about Japan. And all Japanese are not like that, of course, and all Japanese do not do that, but there was a time when that was rampant. And it is rampant in some countries even now. But, you see, then you had an interest in Japan, you had an interest in Korea, you had an interest in China, you had an interest in Taiwan, you had an interest in all of these areas that were around there. And now, if this boy is in school, and the boy from Japan says, and you know, those darn Taiwanese, you know, they're trying to move in on our territory. And they're trying to... And he's telling how they're setting up their country and they're setting up their businesses to take over the Japanese businesses, and that they're doing perhaps just as well because the modern technology is available to everybody on computers. And then they start talking about, and then in the backyard across the way there is a Heinz, he's German. That's a good German voice name. Huh? Heinz is a good German boy's name. Okay. Heinz. Yeah, yeah. Henry. And Heinrich. And so he goes back and talks to him, and he says, oh, I tell you, when I was home before I came to America, it was something. We had the freedom to grow and build our country into a fantastic country, and it was glorious. We did all these great things. And you know what? We learned about computers. Oh, computers, that's the thing in Germany. That's the thing, that everybody's got a computer in their hand, in their heart, in their head, whatever they're doing. And, you know, computers are such fun things. They're so easy. Do you see mine here? Oh, how'd you do that? You try one. Oh, something went wrong. Yep, you crashed it. Now, here's how you uncrash it. And here's how you do this. Wow! That's great! Isn't that expensive? Well, not for me. My daddy is independently wealthy. Your daddy's independently wealthy. How did I get my daddy to be independently wealthy? Well, started with you, I guess, you know, because I told my daddy I wanted this and I wanted this and I wanted this. And my daddy said, what do you think we are? Born, you know, we got a money tree out in the backyard. And Heinrich says, yeah, Dad, we got a money tree out in the backyard because the German government pays for everything. And his daddy says, hey, you're right. I'm so used to doing it for myself, I forgot. And so he goes to the government, and he says, my son wants to work on this project. I need to have this for it. And the government says, sure, here. And he takes it, works on it, unlimited. Now, where did these guys learn their geography? Where did they learn their computers? Where did they learn their languages? Where did they learn to speak a little Japanese, a little German, a little Ukrainian, you know, Russian? Where did they learn to do these things? They learned it in their associations. School may have helped them to build vocabulary and build other things, but they did these things in the backyard. They did these things with their friends. They knew it already. And when they talk to their friends, you put a bunch of children together from many different nationalities, and before very long at all, they're talking to each other, and they're sharing with each other, and they're talking, and so they each knew each other's language, and they do. They do. Because they expected them to know. And they know. You see, we live in a very non-judgmental world, if we would only recognize it. Because children don't judge. It only is when the adults get into the scene that from their predilections, they start judging. And that's unfortunate. And we don't need to do that for ourselves. What we want to do is to be open and receptive to our highest and our best and our most imaginative way of doing anything. And when we do that, then we are really in for some magical experiences. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Now, think about it. Where is it that we learn? I select out of the allness each step of my path. Do you think that the children were selecting out of the allness each step of their path as they spoke to their neighbors? Yes. Hey, you silly person, you're from another country. You're another color. You're another language. Hey, tch, I don't want anything to do with you. Kids don't say that. They say, hey, tell me about yourself. You know, you're interesting. You're different than I am. And the other fellow says, and you're different than I am. And yeah, we are, aren't we? Now, and then they start talking. And they start being one. And there is no communication gap. There is no gap between their ethics, their principles. Because I'm not a Jew, and does a Jew not bleed when he is pricked with a pin? Remember Shakespeare's soliloquy on the Jew? Every Jew, if you touch him with a pin, he'll bleed. Any child from anywhere in the world, you touch him with a pin, and he'll bleed. Do they have feelings? Do they have emotions? Do they have desires to be happy? I was spending a lot of time in Africa, Nigeria, and Ghana recently, and we went down there thinking that they were given limited education.
And every single person we spoke to down there, every single person, was literate beyond imagination. They were brilliant. They were beautiful. And here, Ellen and I were the only two white pinheads walking around. And all of these black people were around us. And we didn't think that they were black. We thought they were people. And they happily didn't think we were white, like two pimples on a something or other. They just drew their arms out and extended it and took us in. We were belonging because we felt no different. We wanted to share our thoughts, and they shared their thoughts. They said, "That's right, that's what we believe too, and we believe this and we believe that." And they believed a few things that we hadn't chosen to believe about because we had been of the idea that that was something different and unusual and not necessarily what we wanted to think about. But in the process of talking to them, they didn't persuade us to think their way. They just lived their own philosophy logically, and it was a beautiful experience for us, you see? Unconditional love. Unconditional expressions, no judgment. When we go around the world without judgment, when we go around the world with joy in our hearts, when we go around the world telling the story of international love, international sharing, international peace-giving, then we experience that ourselves. And we did. Everywhere we went, people open their hearts and their houses to us. Now, I am sure that the traditional religions, the people who are outstanding speakers in those areas and who go around the world speaking, the people open their doors to them too. And they're honored when they come into their house. Except, Ellen and I take this as a great compliment. We are told that these other people who come and share their dreams and their philosophy with the people do not stay in their homes. They stay in hotels. They do not stay in their homes because the home doesn't have enough amenities that they're used to, like the running water and the toilet indoors and other things. They don't have that. And so at home, they have all those things. And so they really don't want to. Now, I do have one little attitude which sets me aside from the local populace, wherever I may be. I eat American foods wherever I go. Wherever I am, I eat American foods. I eat foods I am familiar with, and foods that I'm comfortable with, and foods that I know my tummy will enjoy and allow me to be myself. I don't go out and eat unusual meals because, oh, you must try this. I mustn't try it. I don't really give a damn in hell about your food. I care about your mind. I care about your heart and your soul. You don't have to shove your food down me. Well, I don't say that. But that's what I would say if they were persuasive. I'd say, hey, cool it. I will talk to you forever. But to eat your food that I'm not familiar with and that my stomach is not immediately responsive happily to, I say, I want to keep my attitude up and my constitution up, and I want to keep my theory. Well, you should be able to eat anything. That may well be. But I'm not going to test that right now. Right now, I'm just working with my consciousness. I'm working with what I'm doing. Oh, Ingeborg, she was over there, and she did everything. She ate everything, and she had a good time, and she was perfectly healthy, just like Ellen. But Ingeborg made a mistake. She drank some water that wasn't necessarily good for her. How she got it, where she got it, what happened is immaterial. But the thing is, she got a sickness, and that was a shame. And the sickness almost killed her. And that is true. And it's a shame that these things happen, and I don't intend to be part of that. I will drink bottled water with a secure cap on it. Because I know how they fill up their bottles. We do the same thing, you know. I want that bottle cap secure. I want it to have come directly from whatever plant the filtration of the water was made in. And even that may not be too good, you know what I mean? But the thing is, that's what I do. Because when I am in a strange environment, I want to keep myself perfect. Now, I know I'm sort of playing the game with this idea here a little bit, but I want to say to you, live as fully as you can in whatever direction you can, however you can, and do it. Now, they wanted us to wear their clothing down there too. Well, it would have been just wonderful putting on this dress over your naked body. But they don't wear it over the naked body. They have four or five other layers of clothing underneath it, you know? And it's hot as can be. And I said, no, no, I'll just wear my shorts and my shirt and, you know, one layer of each, and I'll be comfortable. And I was. And I was. And they were sitting there mopping their foreheads because that's normal. They always carried a mop with them because that was part of their costume, was to be able to mop their foreheads. But you see, I don't judge that. I don't judge that at all. All I do is say what I want. All I do is say where I am at. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to say where we're at. No, thank you. No, thank you. Now, you go down to Africa, and you go down to areas that are rife with AIDS, and if you are of a mind to have sex with the people there, would you do it? Why not? You should be above that. You should be beyond that. Well, perhaps I am, but I don't want to test it. I don't want to test it. I want to live in the consciousness of my purity. And you see, as I long, long ago gave up any interest in sex because I just had no interest in it. And now, members of our staff here are a little giving it up because they no longer have an interest in it. And it's not because there's anything wrong with sex. It's just that they're putting a greater interest in their spiritual development, in their spiritual time. Now, here we have our athlete. And the athlete is very good, very competent, very capable, and he spends his time running. Now, if the athlete were to start drinking liquor, he would defeat his ability to do the things because his body would depend upon alcohol for a stimulus. You understand? Mm-hmm. Now, if an athlete were to go out and have sexual experiences, he would deplete his body of certain energies. Now you say, well, for a lot of athletes, they have sex all the time and they're just up and at it and powerful. My loves, I don't want to in any way discourage sex. You understand that? But if that athlete who has sex all the time were not to have sex all the time, but still to have the drive and apply it to his sport, he would be 3 to 4 times better than he is, and he's good. You understand?
Yeah.
He's good, but he could be 3 to 4 times better or more. Mm-hmm. Now, I have DSS files here. That's the digital sound system for voices. And the digital sound system for voices is very excellent. It's like your MP3 music, you know, and real high quality. However, it is high quality at the tiniest amount of space on the disc. Because what it leaves out are all of the areas of the voice which you don't hear, and all of the vibrations that would be put onto the disc that you don't need. You understand that? Because when the disc is listening, when the microphone is picking you up and putting you on the disc, you have a lot of vibratory vibrations that get onto the disc that don't need to be there. You have a lot of highs that no one can hear. You have a lot of lows that no one can hear. And by the time they take off these extraneous vibrations, they have got the disc, they have got the bite down so small that you can put, let's say, there is 8,000 kilobytes, 8,000 kilobytes of sound for an hour lecture that I give on the DSS file. And on the wave file, there is 2 million kilobytes. And on the WMA file, which is another type of file, which is most commonly used by tape players and things like that, it is something like 6 million bytes, whether it's bytes or megabytes or whatever the thing may be. But it is 6 million. Now, when you go from just a hundred or so, or a number of hundreds, up to a million, that's a lot. Now, you see, the technique of getting rid of those extraneous vibrations so that the bytes can be smaller is quite something, you see? Now, in an athlete, if he is using some of his bodily talents with drinking alcohol, he is taking away from the directed energy to his physical self as being an athlete. Now, do you think a good opera singer drinks? No. Do you think an exquisite being does these things? No. Do you think that an exquisite opera singer smokes cigarettes?
No.
Not if they're good. And on and on, with all these inhibitive things that we do to our bodies, and we think that that does not have an effect on who we are as the genius we are. Now, when we saw this movie, The Neverland, Return to Neverland, we saw that they were putting their attention on their thought, their thinking about things. They were thinking about going to Neverland. They were thinking about the fun of being a pirate. They were thinking about playing the games, as children do in their games very well. Now, two things were happening in that film. There was the adult and there was the child. The child saw everything in its, what would you say, in its natural way. He saw the pirates with their costumes on. The adult saw the child trying to pretend it was a pirate with a costume. The child saw the pirate as a pirate with a costume. You see, there's quite a difference there. Now, the adult wrote the story from the point of view of a child pretending, and a child saw the story from the point of view of the child being. And for the child to be, it would take a great deal more, what would you say, bites on the disc than for the child pretending. It would take many less bites on the disc, because the costume could be one set of bites. The voice could be another set of bites. The physical size could be another set of bites. And you see, these things are all blended together. We don't know how they're blended together. At least I don't. They do know it, I'm sure, in intellectual circles of computerdom. And as they're doing these things, what are they doing? What they're doing is they are utilizing to the highest and to the best. Now, is there any capacity to a child's computer, a hard disk, you know, to the limit to the hard disk in the child? Is there any capacity?
Storage.
Is there any limit to the storage in the child?
No.
Is there a limit to the storage in the adult?
No.
Yes. He puts it there. I can only handle so much. No. You push it. I'm going beyond the. And I'm going to go over the edge. And then he'll be a child. But you see, the child has no limits. The child does not perceive things as an adult perceives it. A child perceives things as a child does, with an unlimited awareness. Does a child think that they can take all of their friends on a boat ride down the river? And the boat only holds 10 people. But they think they can take all their friends. And so what do they say? Oh, sure, we can take them all. And the father says, there's no room. And the child says, Dad, make a couple of trips. Oh. You see, it's the last thing you would have thought about. He says, there's not a room. The pure, unadulterated logic gets to him first. And then comes the magic of the child. He smells manure. There must be a horse around someplace. How true that is. How true that is. See, we want to be non-judgmental. We want to be non-comparable, just incomparable, incomparable. We want to be without an equal. We want to be unrivaled, unparalleled, unsurpassed, unmatched, unique. Now, can you be that? Can you be unrivaled? Can you be unparalleled? Can you be unmatched? Can you be unique? And the answer is, if you're willing to set aside your limited human attitude and be your spiritual self. Because your human attitude says there are only 10 seats in the boat. But your spiritual attitude says, take a couple trips. Or your spiritual attitude says, think a bigger boat. Dad, we have a boat that holds 10. Now, we're bringing 30 of our kids there. So we go to the river. And here's this man with this boat that holds 40 people, you know. And he says, where are you going to put all those kids? Well, we're going to take a couple of trips and give them take my boat, you know. Take my boat and have a good time, you know. And there's room to spare. Do you understand? Room to spare. When your consciousness is open and receptive to the beauty of who you are, and that means non-judgmental, because, I can make these things happen because I'm fictional and I'm making them up. Or am I?
No.
Or am I?
No.
Do you think I ever go and have these experiences happen to me?
Yes.
All the time?
Yes.
You betcha. You betcha. Okay, we'll come back in a little bit for lecture 10. And every moment I am born again. So have a lovely pause and know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.